You ever known someone? You ever seen someone that was in a situation where it was a little difficult? And this person was one of those folks that was sort of hard-headed and was determined to do it their own way. This person just plowed ahead, doing their own thing without giving heed to anybody's warning, anybody's counsel, anybody's words of wisdom or advice. And at first it seemed like they might make it. But then what you knew was going to happen happened. You sort of had to bite your tongue to keep from saying, "I told you so." Have you ever seen somebody or known somebody that was in that situation? They just would not listen, had to do it their own way. I know people like that a lot. Just refuse to listen to anything anybody has to say. Just determined they're going to make it their own way and mess up, make bad choices. Sometimes these choices have got devastating consequences. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 16 and verse 25, this verse says, "There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." It's a way that seems right. Oh, this is going to be right. I'm going to make it. It's going to work. Not every time. There's another proverb. Proverbs chapter 12, and verse 15. "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise." The way of a fool, this calls him a fool that thinks that he's right, won't listen to anybody else. My way is right, it's right, it's going to be right no matter what. But he that hearkeneth to counsel is wise. Now this kind of shows us one of the problems that we have in our society, in our day and time, and way of thinking for many people. It is called independence. And folks, we strive for this, don't we? We want to be independent. We think that because, you know, our nation is independent of other nations, and that's, you know, we have Independence Day and all of those things. We like independence. And as children, we grow up and we cannot wait until the day that we're independent. We can make our own choices. We're not listening to mom and dad anymore. And we're going to be on our own, do our own thing. We yearn for it. And because of that, many times people think that they're always going to make the right choices. It's not always so. Today we want to talk about dependence, not independence, but we want to talk about dependence. It's very important that we understand who it is that we're supposed to be dependent on. Independence is good, it's got its place, but we got to understand just how it works. Who are we supposed to be dependent on? Well, I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? Here we are at church. We're here to think about God and godly things. We're supposed to be dependent on God. Why? Because we are sheep. Remember 23rd Psalm and all those things that are there in the 23rd Psalm and the descriptions about sheep? You know, sheep, really, they're pitiful creatures. They've got no sharp hooves or no sharp teeth. So they can't defend themselves. They're not aggressive creatures anyway. They're real passive. Any little thing and they're going to run. They have no navigational equipment, so they get lost. They have no way to know how to get back home. They can't take themselves from one area of good grass to another area of good grass. They need somebody to guide them at all times. They can't provide for themselves. They are not hunters. They will go in the same paths over and over and over, create huge ruts, much more than what our cows create. They will eat the grass down to the dirt. Okay? Sheep are just not that self-sufficient. And we're sheep. Over and over again, we get the idea that Christ is the shepherd and we are the sheep. And sheep are not that bright. Now, why in the world would a sheep want to try to make it on his own? I don't know. But they do. They do. Sheep need shepherds, and there are sheep that get in trouble. And eventually, if we learn about shepherding, those sheep that are just strong-headed, usually they don't have long lives. Either they lose their lives to prey, or they lose their lives because the shepherd gets tired of taking care of them. We're sheep, and we need a shepherd. We need to be dependent on God and trust in Him for all things. God, it's almost as if God created us knowing that we couldn't get where we're going without Him. It's almost as if He would have said to us, you know, I created you knowing that you don't know how to get where you're going. You need me. And a lot of people just shut that out. And they don't lean on God at all. But that's not the only person that we need to be dependent on. We are dependent upon our spouses. You know, we need them. Men need women and women need men. And without it, we couldn't perpetuate the race. We could not join together in the way that describes Christ and the church, as we see in Ephesians chapter 5. We are complementary to each other and we need each other. Now, there may be folks that are not married, and I know we've got some young people that aren't, but we needed our mothers, guys. And girls, we needed our fathers. We need each other in that. And bigger than that, okay, we need God. Of course, we're dependent on God. We're dependent on our spouses, but we're dependent on each other. We are dependent on each other. And if we were to look in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, we're going to read a few verses here, but we're going to start at verse 4, 1 Corinthians 12 and 4. Now there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. And Paul goes on to describe that there are many different gifts. And in verse 8, he picks up and he says, "For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the gifts of healings by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another diverse kinds of tongues, to another interpretation of tongues. By all these worketh the one that the same Spirit, dividing to every man severally as he will. For as the body is one, and hath many members, and all the members of the one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ." We are dependent on each other because, just like the hand is in need of the eyes to tell it what to do, just like the head is in need of the feet to carry it where it wants to go, just like the arms are in need of the back and trunk to support it so that it can lift, we are all different. We are all different. We have different talents. We have different skills. We have different abilities. And we need each other. And without each other, there's no way the hand can do what it needs to do without a foot to carry it anywhere. There's no way the eyes can do its job if without the legs. All it can do is stay in one place and look around. It can't see anything else. And we need each other. We are dependent on each other. We are dependent on each other. Let's go back to Proverbs, where we were reading earlier. We read in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 15. This passage says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise." He that listens. See, we're dependent on each other. And it may be that the experience that I'm going through, you've already gone through two or three times, and you know what I need to do. You know how I can avoid the pitfalls. You know how I can avoid messing up. You know what I need to do because you already made the mistakes. And if I'll just listen to you and the mistakes you've already made, I can avoid those mistakes. I went to a conference. And I know that a lot of you go to conferences from time to time. And usually at these conferences, especially the bigger ones, they have a keynote speaker. Well, at this particular conference, they had a keynote speaker, and it was a group of fighter pilots that after they reached the age of retirement, which was, I guess, young for fighter pilots, they decided to create this company that would go around and teach corporate education. And one of the things that I learned that I thought was just incredible was the process that the military uses called debriefing. After a mission, they go into a room and they says that the way they describe it, it says nobody has any rank at that point. So the name and rank comes off the uniform. And they talk about what they'd learned and what they did right and what they did wrong. And the purpose of that is so that the people who have 20 years of experience are able to pass that experience on to the people that only have 1 year of experience. That way, these younger folks, as they come along, get to benefit from this wealth of knowledge that this 20-year experienced person has. And they said in the corporate world, it can be accomplished as well to go through periodically and talk about what you've learned from a certain experience, what you've gained, what you can do better, what you could have done worse. We're familiar with the Blue Angels. And that's that team of pilots that do all the acrobatic stunts. And it's, you know, very visually appealing to see them fly. They fly the same routine daily. I don't know if it's even on weekends, but they do it daily, every day, and every day. Every day they fly the same routine, and every day they go through a debriefing process that lasts longer than the flight itself. Every day they do that. And as Christians, we go through life and we may never talk to anybody else about what we could do right or wrong in life. We may never look to another Christian and say, can you advise me on this? Why is that? Because we've got this independent streak in us that we think we're going to make our own choices. And that nobody else knows what's right for me. I've got to make my own choices. And we make mistakes. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 22 tells us, without counsel, purposes are disappointed. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. I've had a few crossroads in life, and I usually, when I reach a point where I just don't know what's the best choice, I'll try to reach out and tap into folks and ask, make sure I'm going to make the right choice. And I know a lot of you do the same thing when we reach these big crossroads. But what do we do with the smaller things? Who helps us on the smaller decisions? Who helps us with the smaller things? Do we lean on each other for that? We should. Solomon, in all of his wisdom, you know, he didn't heed to it all of his life, but in all of his wisdom, he records that when we work on our own, we're apt to stumble and fall because we may think we are right, but we are dead wrong. And that's essentially what he said, because he said the ends of those ways are the ways of death. So we are dead wrong. But if we'll just lean on other people, if we'll just lean on other people that we trust, we're going to talk more about that in just a minute, we can avoid mistakes, we can avoid pitfalls. And this says, our purposes shall be established with the multitude of counselors. We need to lean on each other. We've got to let that pride go. Lean on each other. Lean on God. So let's take this concept that we've talked about today and let's try to create a set of rules that we can kind of go by. Things to help us so that we can take this idea with us and apply it to real life. Well, first rule, it's probably the simplest one. Our dependency is supposed to be on God. But let's take this deep. Let's turn over to John chapter 4. And let's look at a story that we know so well. And this is the time when Jesus was there in Samaria. And he's sitting on a well, sort of resting a little bit, and a woman from Samaria comes along and she starts to talk. Well, actually, he starts to talk to her. And they have this conversation, and we know it well, and he asks for water, and she's amazed because he's even talking to her in the first place. And she says, "Well, sir, the well is deep, and you don't have anything to get this water out." And anyway, Jesus is talking to her, and we're going to pick up and read there in verse 10. "If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, 'Give me to drink,' thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." Living water. All right, so let's just think about that. She's blown away by that. What does that mean? Living water? She even says that. "Sir, if thou sayest unto me..." Verse 11. "The woman said unto him, 'Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us this well, and drank thereof himself and his children and all his cattle?' And Jesus answered and said unto her, 'Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again,'" speaking of the well itself, "'but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up unto everlasting life.'" And the woman says, "Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw." She's thinking, "Man, I'll never be thirsty. I'll never have to come back and get this water. This is going to change my life forever. I need this water." She still doesn't understand. She just doesn't understand. And so Jesus tries to get her attention. He says, "Go call your husband." "My husband? My husband?" You see, this woman has had five husbands. And she's just given up on marriage altogether. And she's living with the man that she's with now, not married. Okay, that's enough of the story. We know it well, but the point we want to make is contained in this little bit that we've read. First of all, Jesus says, if you drink of this water, this physical water, you will thirst again. It will not quench your thirst indefinitely. And then, she just still doesn't get it. Go call your husband, okay? She's had five. There's some things that we can learn right there in those two little parts of our story. The physical water would not quench her thirst indefinitely. How many times have you wanted something? You wanted it bad. You thought about it. You craved it. And it could be something small, video game. It could be something small like a bicycle. Or it could be something big like a car or a house. And you wanted it, and you thought about it, and you thought about it, and you thought about it, and finally you got it. How long was it before the new wore off? Not too long. Not too long. And then it became old hat. You see, that water would not quench your thirst indefinitely. And so, even with marriage, here this woman is, and Jesus calls her out on it. She's been married five times. Where has she been looking for her fulfillment? What has she been using to try to quench her thirst? Marriage. She can't make it work for whatever reason. She tries over and over and over again. She gets married, it doesn't work. She gets married again, it doesn't work. She gets married again, it doesn't work. She gets married again, it doesn't work. One more time. Now she's just going to give up on marriage and just going to check up, and you know that's what she's doing. Jesus says, this is not going to quench your thirst either. This is not going to fulfill you either. But what I give you will quench your thirst, and you will never thirst again. It'll be a spring in you welling up. What is that? That's when we lean on God. That's when we trust in God. That's when we look for His guidance, look for His wisdom within the Word. That's when we're focusing on Him first. That's when we truly, truly seek Him first, as it says in Matthew 6 and 33, that we would seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. That when we truly seek those things, that's that well of water springing up within us. But when we're seeking other things first, when we're seeking material possessions, when we're seeking love, when we're seeking anything fleshly, it's not going to fill us up. Our dependency needs to be on God. And if it's on any other thing, we got to realize that we will not be satisfied. But when our satisfaction comes from God Himself, then that's going to fill us up. And this passage here in John says that it's going to be a spring welling forth unto eternal life. So it's going to be boiling up in us and spreading out to those around us. We can't help but share it because it's that much a part of who we are. First rule, dependency must be on God. The second rule is that we need to be dependent on relationships with us that are equal or greater to us. That seems a little complex to start with, but it's going to make more sense. Relationships that are equal to or greater than us. Remember, we're talking about dependency. So we're going to depend on people that are equal to us or greater than us in our lives. What does that mean? What does that mean? Well, we need positive influences in our lives. And as we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, we've got to avoid those relationships that are not going to be positive influences. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. I like that verse because it says, don't be deceived. Don't think you can do it. Don't think you can get close to it. Don't think that you can hang around. It won't be affected. Evil communications corrupt good manners, and that word is communications. Evil communications. What's communication? Well, all kinds of stuff. It doesn't say evil companionship, although that's included. It says evil communications. So there we go. We're looking at evil that we might see on the internet. Evil that might come through the television. Evil that might come through the radio. Evil that might be on our iPod or our MP3 player. Evil that might come through our car radio. Evil communications corrupt good manners. We don't need to be dependent on those things. Don't be deceived. It will affect you. It'll affect you negatively. We need positive relationships. Now, let's talk about this concept of being equal to or greater than us. Remember, we're talking about dependencies. Not that we can't have relationships that are different or, you know, not the same as us, but we're talking about dependency. I need to depend on Michelle, but I cannot depend on Malia. Malia can depend on me. I can't depend on her. What happens when we get this wrong? I don't want to advocate everything that Dr. Phil says, but he has a saying. A child should not be born with a job. There are people, a lot of times, it's our young teenage folks that have no parental figures, that have nobody to give them love. And they get this idea that if they have a child, the child will give them love. The child will make them feel complete. They have a child at a very, very inappropriate young age, thinking that the child is going to fix their need for love. They're dependent on the child. Now, it may be a young teenage person, or it could be somebody that's older. Dependent on the child to give them love. It's not the way we're supposed to be. Our dependency is supposed to be on God and then on other people. But if we get this wrong, we create a system or we create a way of life that's got many problems. Let me give you an example. There was a woman who had done just this. She was dependent on her daughter to give her emotional fulfillment, to give her love. She was dependent upon the daughter. So we got a situation that the mother's supposed to be giving the guidance and it's the other way around. So the mother is constantly in this child's life because that's where she's trying to find her fulfillment, is in the life of the child. Constantly involved with the child grows up as they do. Gets married. The mother involves herself so much in the life of the child that she drives the child away. The child moves 1,000 miles away to get away from this situation. has children. This mother sues for grandparental visitation rights. The daughter and son-in-law spent $18,000 in court costs to try to get away from this. Now, this woman is seeking emotional fulfillment in the life of her daughter. Do you think she got it? No. No. Okay, that's an extreme. That's an extreme. The relationship, and this is called triangling, where a parent looks within the child's life for fulfillment. It's not supposed to be that way. What's supposed to be most important? What are we supposed to be dependent on, God? And then what? On others? But not somebody that's lesser than us in our life. If the situation is such that they need to be dependent on us, then that's the way it needs to be. And it's poison to have it the other way around. There's another critical issue that we need to pick up when we think about relationships. We are to be dependent on other people and not on things. What's the great commandment? Love the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul. What's the second? The second most important thing in our world is to love your neighbor as yourself. It's not that you would love a thing. It's a human being. It's a relationship. So, folks that love a sport, whatever it is, golf, hunting, fishing, four-wheeling, whatever, we're all guilty of enjoying these things at some level. But when those things replace relationships, we're out of balance. We cannot be dependent upon those things to bring us fulfillment, or it's poison to us. We are to be dependent upon people, not things. Okay, let's get into a couple of warnings here, a couple of dangers. Because we realize that we need to be dependent on God. There's no question on that. We need to be dependent on each other. So what does that mean? How does that work? If someone is dependent upon somebody they respect, maybe it's somebody that would stand here in this pulpit and preach. If they are dependent on that person, then how does that work? Well, dependency cannot diminish an individual's personal responsibility. It means you can't trust the preacher. I mean, yeah, you can trust me. I want you to. But you got to be looking for yourself. Because our number one dependency is to be on God. So your number one dependency can't be on me or anybody else that would stand here. Number one dependency must be on God. You remember in the book of Acts, the way the Bereans treated Paul. Paul, the Apostle Paul, who wrote half the New Testament, went all over the world teaching and preaching. You know what? They didn't trust him. Acts 17, verse 11 says, "And these were more noble than they at Thessalonica, in that they searched the Scriptures daily to prove those things were so." Every day, they were going behind Paul, looking and checking and making sure, because they were dependent on God. Not a man. Okay. There's a balance here that we got to find. You know, we need to be dependent on each other. We have to be. We should be. It's good. But ultimately, even though we are, that doesn't diminish the fact that we all need to be responsible for ourselves. We've all got to be looking ourselves within the Scriptures. Because if you put all your dependency on a person, that person is right. And as the expression goes, you know, want to bet the farm, and I don't like that because it's got the, you know, gambling term in it. But if we're gonna place all of our faith and confidence on one person and what they'd have to say without checking for ourselves, then that's not wise. It's not as wise as the Bereans were. So there's a need for us to realize that it's really spiritual abuse to put all of our faith in what one person would say without checking. It's not a bad thing to trust somebody that's got more experience, but as we learn, we've got to check and prove and make sure from the Scriptures that what we're doing is in accordance with God's Word, because He is who we're dependent upon first. So, what does that mean for us then? Especially if we are older and hopefully have more wisdom, and maybe because we're teaching that people should be dependent on God and then dependent on each other, maybe somebody comes to us. Somebody comes to us and asks for advice, asks for our counsel. Someone comes in the middle of a problem. What do we do? How do we handle it? Can't play God. We can't act as if we have all the answers. We can't act as if they can put 100% trust in us. How much better is it to say, listen, this is why I believe. Here's why I believe it. Book, chapter, verse. Look, this is what Paul said in this situation. You know, that old habit of book, chapter, verse, where we've got things memorized and where we know where to go. We've kind of lost that habit, I think, at large. Many people have. And yet, how safe is that when it comes to teaching someone and advising them? We're not going to advise them because we think we've got the answers. We're going to say, well, listen, I think that probably this might work because this is what the Scriptures say and this is what God would have us to do. What does that do? That diminishes us in their eyes and it elevates God. And it helps to guide them to put their dependency on God and not on me or not on you or not on anyone else. Dependency is something that we need to understand. It's something that we need to think about. And we got to realize that we don't need to strive for independence in our life and in our thinking, but we need to be dependent upon God. I want us to close with two verses. One is in Isaiah chapter 55. Two passages here. Isaiah 55, the first two verses. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. What it's saying is, you're out there spending money and you're working and you're trying to do all these things and it will not fill you up. But with no money at all, you can come to God and buy and eat things that will satisfy your soul fully and completely. With no money at all, because it's about turning to Him. Turning to Him and leaning on Him and depending on Him in life. And finally, the verse that I'd like to close with is one that we've read already. It's in John chapter 4. John chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. And here we have Jesus at the Samaritan well. And Jesus says, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. If we're drinking of fleshly things, if we're drinking of fleshly water, thinking that we're going to satisfy our soul, we will not. We will not. But Jesus says, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up unto everlasting life. And this is my prayer for all of us this morning. That this well of water that's within us, that this water that we would drink of, that Jesus would give, that that would fill us. That we would be dependent upon that water to sustain us in our lives, that we might be full and satisfied spiritually, that we might have abundance and be ready to share to others and be ready to depend on them, that they would also depend on us, pointing and guiding everyone back to God and to His Word with our lives. Independence is a problem. Therapy, I kid around with folks, they'll say, I'm just hard-headed. I say, well, that's fine as long as we can get it pointed in the right direction. Be hard-headed about this. Be hard-headed that the only person we're going to listen to is God and His Word, and we're going to trust in it. Is that where your trust is today? You want to turn to Him, walk with Him, be closer with Him? Have you named the name of Jesus to be baptized? Have you repented of your sins and confessed His name? Have you become a Christian? We have opportunity today. Are you living in an independent way, in a way that's sinful? Then make that right. Confess your faults to God. He will forgive you. We'll pray with you that you might be strengthened. Can we be of assistance in any way? If so, please let it be known as we stand and sing.